Hi there. Welcome to the 45 Not Out podcast, the podcast for sassy women age 45 and over who are still serious about their career, life, and everything else, really. And they definitely aren't finished yet. It's great to have you here. And if you're here for the first time, then you're doubly welcome. Would you believe we've reached episode 20? And to celebrate this, I'm speaking to someone a bit special and definitely off-piste when it comes to the values of the podcast. My guest this time is Freya Lewis. Freya was one of the survivors of the Manchester Arena bombing in May 2017. She was aged only 14 at the time and was attending an Ariana Grande concert. Now, Freya was stood only 3 metres away from the suicide bomber when he activated the bomb and, as you can imagine, was very badly injured during the attack. However, Freya undertook a long and harrowing journey back to full health. But she's been able to restart the life she had before her injuries. And on this mega courageous journey, she's been awarded a Child of Courage Award. She's taken part in the Manchester Junior 10K, raising around £60,000 for the Royal Manchester Children's Hospital, which incidentally was the hospital that nursed her back to health. And she's also written a book along the way called What Makes Us Stronger. Now, from all that I've outlined, it's clear that Freya is well below the target age of 45, but there's a reason why I've asked her to be a guest on the podcast. Freya grew up and lives in the same Cheshire village where I've lived for the past 25 years. That village is Holmes Chapel, and it's been my privilege to watch her grow up as one of the village community. We're a small, tight community here, so you can imagine how rot we were when Freya was caught up in that horrendous attack. But from bad comes good. And Freya has become something of an icon for resilience, courage, and all that's good in her generation. That's the very reason why I wanted her as a guest. Our chat doesn't concentrate on the atrocities of the attack, but rather it's a celebration of good things in young people. And I'm sure within the age range of the podcast, many listeners will have children of a similar age to Freya. And also, being a tad indulgent, the podcast gives Freya the platform to broadcast a very genuine and heartfelt thank you to all the Holmes Chapel community for the care, support and love she and her family received during her recovery and afterwards. Although Freya's frequently been featured in the media, for some time even after the attack, she's never had the opportunity to say thank you until now. So, if non-Holmes Chapel listeners can forgive us for the indulgence, prepare yourself for a thoroughly positive and uplifting chat between Freya and myself. We talk about Freya's hope for her future now that she's finished school. And please bear in mind that the episode was recorded just prior to her receiving her very successful A-level results. And of course, Holmes Chapel's most famous son, Harry Styles. Yep, that's right. Until he was catapulted into superstardom, he was just another boy attending the local comprehensive school. Who knew? And look where he is now. So, settle in for an honest, uplifting, and dare I say, thought-provoking chat with Freya. And my thanks go to her for agreeing to take part in the first place, and also to just being an awesome guest. So, for now, here's Freya. Hi there, welcome to 45 Not Out, the podcast for sassy women over 45. And this time we've got rather a special guest. We've got Freya Lewis. Hiya Freya, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for agreeing to be on the podcast. Now, I suppose the most important thing in your life at the minute is you've just done your A levels, haven't you?
I have, yes.
How did that go?
It was really weird. We did them in exam conditions, but in our classrooms, which was really odd. Because I never processed that this was actually my A-level exams. Because when you just sat in a classroom doing it, you don't actually think this is going to be deciding your future. So, yeah. But yeah, my college was quite good about it. We got them done quite fast and then got out of there. So I've not actually thought about them since. And I get my results on the 10th of August. So after I've got them, who knows? But yeah, they went well, thanks. They did. They could have gone so much worse. I think after these past couple of years doing everything at home, I'm like so proud of everyone my age for even doing them and attempting them. So yeah, they could have gone a lot worse, but they went really well.
Totally. I mean, yeah, that's it. I mean, probably, certainly in my memory, never had. I mean, is it fair to say that probably A-level students have probably been the most affected by the pandemic? Certainly, the primaries, and we're hearing now about the mental problems with school children, which you can understand. But as if there wasn't enough pressure with, like, the year 11s and then the year 13s, and as well, I suppose, really, apart from that and the extra pressure that it's put you under, it's a loss of experience, isn't it?
You know, yeah, it's huge when I'm that age, when we're all 17, 18, and we missed out on doing stuff. It's such an odd time to even think back of. Like, I was quite lucky with my 18th birthday. I just missed I had somebody at college tested positive and I had to isolate for 10 days, but my birthday was the day after the 10 days, which was very good, very lucky. And I went out for a drink with my family, and that's all I could really do, and I felt lucky to even be able to do that and go out into Holmes Chapel and get a drink. But it was so weird to not even be like partying. Is that what usual? I don't even know what people my age are supposed to be. Not used to it. But yeah, I think it's brought us closer as a family, and I've made closer friends and things. So it's weird, and I think we have been affected by it quite greatly, but I'm really grateful for my family for keeping me sane and having the best time with them stuck at home like I have been for like the past year. I feel really lucky. Yeah, and I'm so privileged to have them, and they're the ones that got me through it.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned A levels. What's the next step, Freya? What have you got planned?
So hopefully I'm moving to Stratford in London in September to do a BA screen acting course at a drama school. Drama school's always been my dream, and I feel so lucky that I got into it first year. The audition process for tens of drama school, it was really quite stressful, and especially doing Zoom auditions, that wasn't fun, and self-tapes. But I feel so lucky, and I'm so excited to be going down there in September, and just hopefully things will start to be getting back to normal then. So it's like the perfect time for me to be going down there. But yeah, the goal is to act. So I think 3 years of acting every day is the next step to be able to do that. And it's very exciting to think about.
So as part of you, when you sort of after the attack and the Children of Courage awards that you attended, am I right in thinking you met some of the cast of Coronation Street?
I did. It surprised me. For the NHS Heroes Awards in 2018. And they're all really lovely, and they took me around the set, which was really nice as well, because I got to meet people, my acting teachers for the past 6 years, Jenny and Lee Boardman, were in Coronation Street quite a few years ago before I was born, unfortunately. And they helped kind of also set things up, and it was nice meeting people who also knew Jenny and Lee, and it was the most amazing experience. And yeah, them taking me around the set definitely spurred on my love for acting, because I just couldn't wait to go into it. Yeah, that seems like ages ago now. It was only like 3 years ago, but honestly, it seems like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, we have had a lot, rather a lot go on in the meantime, haven't we? Am I right in thinking that you were going to your degree course, and further down, will you have to sort of specialise a little bit? Will there be sort of a niche or anything that you'll have to, sort of say that you want to go down, and maybe the modules that you study will be more specialist as you get further on with your degree?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of stuff that goes on in third year where they get you in touch with what's the people that are going to help you when you leave drama school. So they're partners with like Netflix and ITV and things. So if you want to go into the screen industry like I want to, they can hopefully help me do that. And if you want to do theatre or plays, they can also put you in touch with lots of companies in London, because I'm quite lucky where LMA is. There's the biggest dance studio in London, which is such a beautiful place. And I think on the acting course, you do actually go into there and rehearse there, because it's a beautiful place. So yeah, they've made it clear before I applied that whatever you want to do in the future, they will help you get there. And my dream's almost like always been a sitcom. Always, I've grown up watching too much American TV, and Friends is my favorite TV show in the whole entire world. And it's always been a dream of mine to do something like that for so many years. So hopefully they can help me get there. I'm just excited to train and learn all about acting, because I've loved it for so many years. And it'll be a nice feeling waking up knowing that I'm acting today, and it could potentially lead me to somewhere very exciting in the future. I really hope so, but they're a great place and I can't wait to go.
Yeah, so LMA, what does LMA stand for, Freya? What's it short for?
See, it's quite confusing because it actually stands for Liverpool Media Academy, but I'm at their London campus. So you would think it would stand for London Media Academy, but apparently that's already a thing and it's a completely different thing. So it's Liverpool Media Academy, London.
Right, okay. So you've got the two campuses, Liverpool and London. Fab. So you can imagine really the people that will be tripping out in and out of those campuses. You're gonna pull the Hollyoaks, the Coronation Street, all that crew, and then you're gonna have EastEnders. Oh, you're gonna have a fantastic time, Freya. You're gonna have an absolute fantastic time. Now, you mentioned briefly there Holmes Chapel, and that's, I think I've said in the introduction, that's bit of nepotism, and you've kindly agreed to speak to me. And you and I both know it's a small, well, it was a smaller community. It's getting a little bit bigger, isn't it? Because there's house building going on, like no tomorrow, and a bit of consternation in the village, but that's another area. But just with that though, Freya, I mean, living in a small village after the attack, Freya, do you think the fact that when you were discharged from hospital, you came home to that small community. Do you think that made a difference?
Definitely. Holmes Chapel had given my family so much support whilst I was in there. And especially with the blog that my dad wrote whilst I was in hospital, that was originally meant to just give the people of Holmes Chapel and at the school an update about how I was doing. But it reached the most crazy of places. I remember when we looked at the figures, and thousands of people were reading it in New York and just everywhere across the world wanting to know how I was. So that was insane. But what was most important to me was letting the whole village know that I was okay. And coming home was nice to be back and somewhere familiar. And obviously I was in hospital for like 6 weeks, so I hadn't been there in what felt like forever. And we quietly came home. I remember we didn't announce it anywhere because we didn't want like a stampede of people at the door whilst I was settling back in. But as soon as we did, the amount of people, neighbours, random strangers dropping by and wanting to see me and asking how I was so humbling. And the support that everyone gave me was incredible, and I'll always be eternally grateful. No matter where I go in the world, Holmes Chapel is still my home. It's where I was born, where I grew up. Yeah, it's weird because I do want to get away to London so bad, but then there'll always be a part of me that's like, I'm a Home Chapel girl, I'm a Cheshire girl. I've loved Home Chapel. It's been a beautiful place to grow up in. Like I say, it's expanding a lot now, but I've lived in such a small community and a tight one since I was younger. But yeah, I'm so thankful for Home Chapel and everything they've done for me.
I would imagine as well, after the attack and then the year that followed, I suppose it's fair to say you were thrust into the media a little bit, weren't you, Freya? And 99% of it would have been positive, but presumably there was a little bit that probably you would rather have not have dealt with. And I can imagine, and I'll explain why I'm coming onto this in a minute, that if there was any shielding to be done by friends and neighbours, Holmes Chapel would have done that, would they? Maybe sort of keeping you out of the limelight a little bit whilst you settled back in home and continued with the recovery.
Yeah, definitely. I've had, like you say, positive and negative experiences with the press because there's been like the most lovely things that I've ever done that have got me to where I am today, including this podcast. Every interview and everything I've ever done, I'm so grateful for. But then I think when I was in hospital and my sister would be moving from here back and forth to the hospital because she was doing her A-levels, she was harassed by the press trying to get in the house, everything. She had to run up the road when she wanted to get to school because she was scared of somebody coming and trying to talk to her and shove a camera in her face. But straight away, I think Georgie didn't want to tell my parents to worry them about what was going on at home, but the neighbours around on my amazing street literally basically shielded her from everything and helped protect her and kind of ran over if they ever saw anyone start waiting outside the house or anything like that. And that was when I wasn't even home. So I'm so glad that they were there in that moment because that must have been really scary for her. And yeah, we've definitely had a lot of harassment things and stuff by the press in the early days. We definitely did, end of 2017. But the year following after, obviously there'd always be weird people trying to interview me or ask me questions that I already said I didn't want to answer or try and push things too far, which is always terrifying. And I think as well, when I was 14, 15, you felt like you kind of had to answer them. But luckily the interviews that I did within the first year were mostly with my dad and my dad would just have none of it. If anyone tried to ask a question that I already said no to, he would just shut them down straight away. But I eventually grew to stand up for myself and feel confident enough and comfortable enough to just not answer something if I didn't want to. But yeah, Home Chapel definitely, I think if I had a crazy, like when I met the Corrie cast and went to Manchester or I went to London to do a talk somewhere or something like that, it would always be nice coming back to Home Chapel and sinking back into normal life because this was my safe space and this is where I just felt normal again and I can feel like myself pre 22nd of May. So I'm so glad that I've got a place like this to come back to, and I think that'll always be the same no matter what happens in the future. If I ever want to feel safe and shielded again, I can always come back to Holmes Chapel.
Yeah, absolutely. Safe and shielded. Fantastic. That's a fantastic phrase. But you know, Freya, you and I both know we've got experience at shielding famous residents, haven't we? Yes. I would imagine the world knows that a famous ex-resident now, but we certainly had his formative years here, is none other than Harry Styles. Harry Styles grew up here. I think he moved when he was small. I don't think he was born here. Certainly attended the local schools and was just, you know, one of the village. And then come 2010, he's thrust into the limelight and blimey, look where he is now. Now,
crazy to think about. Honestly, we always say, whenever I show my mom a picture of him, she's like, how did that boy from Holmes Chapel end up there? She's like, I really don't know how that happened, but it's insane looking back on thinking he was one of us.
Totally. But how old were you when you were on X Factor, Freya? Were you old enough to sort of realize the attention they were drawing?
I was seven, eight-ish. But yeah, I was obsessed with them straight away. I think as the whole world knows by now. But yeah, it was weird. I will always remember them when they were on the live shows in X Factor and stuff. I even remember at the bakery at Mandeville's, we used to have these ice buns that would then say all of the members of 1D's names on. I remember I used to say to my mum, like, oh, I want Harry. I'd make her say me, but I can picture it so clearly in the signs hung up by the church that said like vote One Direction, and that's, I think we didn't expect it to be such a thing. If we look back to 2010 when I was there, an 8-year-old, thinking, oh, there's a band that's formed and someone in there is from our village, we had no idea how big that would get, and flash forward 11 years and see how big and insane they are and were. And yeah, it's such a weird time to think back on. But I definitely think of it with such fond memories, and it was a really happy, great time in my life.
Yeah. Like I was saying, I was talking about the, it put us on the map, didn't it? A little bit. I think we've been forgotten a little bit now, which is no bad thing. But certainly in the midst of that autumn of, was it 2010? We could always tell when Harry was home, whether you knew him or not, because we would be invaded by girls from, it's no lie to say, four corners of the world. I mean, in the main, we've sort of from England, Britain, you know, the, because we're on the main London line here. So if you can get a train to Holmes Chapel, and there's probably about 1 hour from Manchester, and certainly very close to Crewe. But then you'd be walking around your village and you hear all these foreign accents with these group of girls, and you're thinking, how on earth and why? And then you'd say, oh God, yeah. Harry and One Direction. And as well, after the competition, they then got signed, didn't they, and they launched their career. I think it was worse after that, because we say somehow they found out when he came home, because, well, I should say actually at this juncture, there's none of the Styles family still living in Holmes Chapel, so if there are any fans listening, you can come to Holmes Chapel, but there's nobody here. So, you know, just putting that out there in case I'm attracting people to him. But at the time, obviously, the family were still living here. And yeah, they did get a lot of attention, didn't they? And as well, just like people did with you, I can remember sort of seeing people. I think Harry took a walk down London Road, which is the main road through the village, that's where he used to live, and he was having to walk in the middle of the road, because on either side of the pavement there was just girls, and people that I knew that lived on London Road were actually out the houses trying to sort of shield him, like, come in here, Harry, come in here. But yeah, it was intense at the time. It didn't last too long, obviously, because when they were signed and everything, you know, it moved away and all the rest of it. But yeah, so I suppose really it's safe to say Holmes Chapel looks after its own, doesn't it?
It does. I think, yeah, there's still definitely people. One of my closest friends, we became friends because she visited Holmes Chapel because she's a giant Harry fan. And we literally just became friends off the back of that. She messaged me one day saying she'd read the book and she was on her way down to Holmes Chapel. And I saw her the other day for a 22nd birthday, and she always comes to Holmes Chapel for a birthday. And I took pictures outside the Holmes Chapel comp sign with her, which felt quite embarrassing because I was like, I went here, it's nothing special to me. I love showing her around Holmes Chapel. My dad did the same actually as well. I think last year he met some girls in the line for the bakery, and I think they had a Harry tattoo, and he kind of said to them, oh, is that Harry tattoo? And they were like, yeah, they were from Chile. And he took them on a whole tour around Holmes Chapel, where he used to live, where he went to school, and down the fields where he used to walk. He literally, for hours, just showed them around Holmes Chapel. So it's still weird, the amount of attention that we do still get. I live right next to the school, so I see people taking pictures outside the sign weekly. I'm like, oh, you're one of me. I think it doesn't, I think people used to say, is Harry your favorite because he lives in the village that you're from. I was like, no, I just gravitated towards him the most. I think if he wasn't from here, I still would have been traveling miles to wherever he was. It's an odd thing. Like, so my friend that comes here all the time, she's like, isn't it amazing? It's so wonderful. I'm like, maybe I should appreciate it more because she's obsessed with it. But yeah, it's such an odd thing. Like you said, though, it did put us on the map, and all Wandy and Harry fans around the world know Home Chapel very well. So yeah, but they do protect us, I think. And in some weird way, there's a weird connection between me and Harry that we were both looked after by the village when they perhaps needed us most in very different ways. He was a very famous guy on the X Factor and I needed looking after and keeping safe. So yeah, but it is that weird little connection between the two of us. Holmes Chapel grew up forever. Yeah.
So you mentioned there's a connection. I am right in saying that in the midst of your recovery, he was kind enough in the middle of his busy schedule to get in touch and offer you his support, didn't he?
He did. The first day that I woke up from my coma, he called my dad and wanted to speak to me and put the phone next to my pillow. And he said, hi, it's Harry. I was very drugged up at this point. I was on a lot of medication. I can only remember him saying, hi, it's Harry. And I said, oh, I love you. And he said, I love you too. And that's literally all I can remember. I'm like, oh, why did he call at that point when I wasn't conscious enough to have a proper conversation? But I mean, I'll take everywhere with me in life that Harry Styles said to me, I love you too. So it wasn't a bad thing. But yeah, it was so kind of him to do that. And then I met him when I went outside of hospital and he was equally and even nicer then. So yeah, I'll always be grateful to him and everything that he did for me and still continues to do for him. I hope I can meet him again one day soon and just thank him for everything, really.
Well, who knows? Because am I right in saying Harry's gone into acting? I know he did Dunkirk, but has he not got another role as well?
He has. He's done two other films, one in America and he's just finished one in Brighton. I'm not sure. I think they're both out next year, 2022. They're both out, which is, yeah, it's weird. I'm just like, he's living my dream right now. I'm like, stick to singing. I want to act. But yeah, he's a very talented guy. And I'm sure there'll be lots of people from Home Chapel watching them when they come out in the cinema thinking he was from Home Chapel and we're quite proud of him.
Totally, totally. Going back to your forthcoming studies, you mentioned you're going to London and coming from a small village to a big city. That's a brave move.
It's a terrifying move. I've always loved, we're city people in my family. America is our favourite place in the whole entire world. We love exploring different cities there, and I think London in some weird way feels like the British version of an American city to me. That's why I love it. I love how alive it feels, all the different culture. Just it's so nice to thinking I'll be getting such a change from Home Chapel, but then I also have it when I need to come home and relax a bit. But yeah, I've always loved London, loved going there as a kid. And it's insane to think I'm going to be living there in such a busy place. But luckily Stratford's quite on the outskirts and it's a nice little quiet bit, so then I'm not thrust straight into the centre of London, which would be quite terrifying coming from Home Chapel. But I'm sure I'll get used to it fast. But it's a really exciting feeling because it's coming up very soon and I can't wait.
Just with you being there though, Freya, once you've found your feet and as you say you're not far out of the centre, and presumably there will be links from the college to the West End. Are there any in particular, any shows that you, I mean, they're not on yet, are they? But sort of any that have been on that may be restarting once in a couple of weeks' time we open up again, you know, or like Andrew Lloyd's Webber Cinderella, that's due to, for its, is it, it'll be its premiere, won't it? Because it's not there now, you know, is there anything in particular that you're looking forward to watching?
Just a show, the feeling of thinking that I can go and see a show soon is just such an exciting, we've not had it for so long. But yeah, Cinderella's supposed to be amazing. And also one that I've always wanted to see in London is Everybody's Talking About Jamie. You heard of that one? I've always wanted that. We've only really seen, I think I've seen Wicked a couple times in London, and that was incredible. And my whole family have an obsession with Matilda. I think we've seen that like four times now at the West End, because Camilla and Charles got us tickets. It was a very random story. We went down to see them because they invited us to go and say hi, so we did. And then Camilla bought me tickets to the West End, like front row. That was the most insane day ever. So I think that nothing will ever beat, because I know never in my life again I can afford tickets that close, but that was the most amazing experience, and I'm just craving that feeling of being at a show again. So anything that I can see, but I think, yeah, on my bucket list in the minute is Everybody's Talking About Jamie, definitely.
Yeah. And did it win BAFTAs? Am I right in saying it's won a BAFTA or two?
Yeah, I think it
Yeah.
did.
Yeah, thought so. Yes. So, okay. So you're taking that brave step, young lady. If there's somebody maybe a few years younger than you and beginning to realize that they have the same passion that you have performing, but maybe are a little bit afraid of going down that route where maybe it's alien to their family, they're fearful what their parents might say. Do you have any advice for them?
It is a terrifying thing. I think it's one of the it's the strangest industry, anything in the performing arts, to go into, because it's such a hard one, because it does seem so terrifying. But I think, obviously I'm biased, but I think it's the best one in the world. And I was really scared to admit that. I think I always loved acting when I was younger, but going to high school and people saying that they wanted all these normal, you call it, jobs, like a doctor, an accountant, all that. I knew that working in an office just was not for me, and I can just not see myself ever doing it. And it was quite a hard thing to say to my parents that they've got to accept the fact that that's what I want to do. I'm not gonna go to uni and get a degree in maths or something. It's all I've ever wanted to do is act, which I think is a scary thing for your parents to hear as well. I completely understand that. I mean, not being a parent myself, obviously, but the thought of my child telling me that is a bit like, ugh. My parents were a bit unsure at first. I think, as normal, pre the 22nd of May, I think if I told them that I just wanted to act and that was it, they definitely were adamant that I had a backup plan. And were kind of expecting me to do something, that acting was just a dream when I was younger and I wasn't actually going to pursue it. I remember having conversations with my parents where they're like, no one makes it, no one gets into acting. And I was like, I know. But after the 22nd of May, obviously you only get one life, and I just wanted to do what makes me happy, and that's what my parents always encouraged me to do. At the end of the day, they want me to go for all my dreams and live my happiest life possible. And I think they came to terms with the fact that what makes me happy, and they see me happiest when I come back from acting every Saturday. They know that that's when I'm the truest to myself and when I'm the most happy. They just kind of thought, oh, they encouraged me to go for it because they thought, we want you to be happy and to do whatever you want. But yeah, I think I just tell my younger self as well to just be prepared by others to get the reaction of that's not realistic, or it's going to be really hard to get a job and you won't earn anything, because that is what the industry is like. It's so hit and miss, and I think I would have prepared myself better as well for rejection. I think drama school really helped that, because every day getting rejected from different audition rounds. Or I got into, so have you heard of Rose Bruford College?
Yes.
Rose Bruford, it's in Sidcup, in Kent, and I got through to the fourth and the last audition round for that drama school, and then got rejected from that a few months ago, and that was heartbreaking at the time. The day that I got that rejection, I think I had my heart so set on it that I wasn't even thinking about LMA, which I'd already got into. I think in my mind I was like, oh, I'm going to Rose Bruford, I've got through to the last audition round. But there's, I think this year there was like 12,000 applicants and there's 35 places on the course. So they're so insane and so competitive that I'm so grateful for LMA that I have that option there. But at the end of the day, I just think, I wish I could have told my younger self as well, just go for it. Don't be scared of what other people are going to think. And yeah, you're going to stand out amongst all your peers at school who are science or English or whatever, but all I ever wanted to do was act. And I'm so grateful to have had that support network from my family who've encouraged me to do that. My sister has just done a music industry management degree at uni, which was also not the most stable career, if you call it that. But at the end of the day, it's what she loves doing and it's what I love doing is acting. So it's a bit weird that we've both gone down that route. And I think it is quite a scary thought for my parents that we may end up jobless in a few years. But like I said, you only live once and why not go for it and try it, because that's what truly makes me happy and I can't imagine myself ever doing anything else.
Superb advice, Freya. Yeah, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, you know, sort of. And as well, who's to know with the last 18 months that we've had, if it's all well and good sort of coming out of uni and going down the academic route, but if your heart isn't in it, and I say, it's the pandemic's turned the world upside down. So, you know, you're absolutely right. Fantastic piece of advice. Thank you. Just with your studies then, if just sort of staying on that, you mentioned the audition process. It's not easy, is it? I mean, you quite rightly said that going through that process, you've got a first taste of rejection. How many auditions did you go for?
I think, I can't remember how many it was in the end, but there was, I think I auditioned to 11 or 12 drama schools and then only got into one. But that sound, I think to people that aren't used to that industry, sounds awful. Must think, how bad am I? But it's like the industry is horrendous. I've always been taught that by my acting teachers growing up to not expect to get in the first year because no one ever does. And I know so many people and so many friends that tried this year and couldn't get in, and it's a horrible thing to have to get used to rejection, especially I will for many, many years to come. But this helps prepare me for it, definitely. And what's meant to be will be. I've always believed that. So if I didn't get into them schools, then I wasn't meant to go there. So many, I think I was reading about Catherine Tate. She didn't get in for 4 years and then only got in on that fourth year after trying and not acting for 4 years. So it's the hardest thing. People, I think you think that Oxford and Cambridge are the hardest things, but no, wait until you try drama school. It's such a harrowing and tiring and heartbreaking process. But in the end, I think it builds you up to be an actor and helps prepare you for what's to come in the future. My acting teachers always said you've got to become best friends with the R word, which is rejection, because 9 times out of 10 it's rejection. But then that one time may be your dream job and you've just got to keep being resilient and bouncing back, which is a horrible thing to get used to. But I think it's worth it in the end, because something will come my way, whatever job and how many jobs I've got rejected from in the end. But yeah, what's meant to be will be.
Yeah. And at the end of it, with 3 years, you'll be, yeah, a fantastic actress on the stage. Yeah. But talking about the auditions, though, Freya, I mean, I know from experience, yeah, it's not just a case if you go in and do the audition, is it? It's the preparation. Do you get sent texts and things that you've got to learn and rehearse?
Yeah, it was a different process for each school. So I'd have at least two monologues prepared for each audition, but certain schools wanted it in a certain time period and some wanted too classical or too modern. It was such an insane process, and some wanted singing, some had live Zoom auditions, some you had to record yourself and send in. But then, like I mentioned about Rose Bruford with the fourth round, it's not even that first thing. Like, if you've got through to the first round, that means nothing because you've still got three more to go, which is such a hard thing to deal with, and trying not to get your hopes up, which is hard not to do. But yeah, I think it was hard, especially for me this year, because I think it would have been easier if I was in the room and I knew what I was doing and I felt more me, because I think the tapes that I recorded at home in my head, I was still thinking I'm in my room at home, I'm not actually acting. And it was a really hard thing to do, but LMA were quite good. They only got you to read, for the screen acting audition, you only had to read any script or monologue from one of your favorite films. That was it, which I think was great because they wanted you to actually perform something that you love performing, because Shakespeare isn't my favorite thing in the world. I don't mind it after a year now of doing different monologues and things. It was such a hard thing to get my head around, but I wasn't as into it and as passionate as I am about modern texts and movies and scripts. So LMA were great. I think that's why maybe they hopefully could see in my audition that I was enjoying myself, and that's my favorite thing to act and do. I think I did a scene from The Notebook, which is one of my favorite films of all time. So I did a scene from The Notebook, and even did my hair and makeup like Rachel McAdams in the film. I went full out, and luckily it paid off. But that was definitely the one audition that I actually enjoyed doing and didn't feel nervous for. But yeah, it was a horrible process. And like I say, they all wanted different ones. And for 12 schools, that was a lot to remember. And I mean, I was doing that in the midst of doing my A-levels. So it was a very stressful time doing an audition upstairs and coming downstairs for an online Zoom lesson and doing homework, but then preparing for my other one the next day. But I'm glad that's now all over and I can relax. I've just got to wait for my A-level results. But they only need two Cs for LMA, so I hope I'm fine with that. But yeah.
Good. So stressful year, but it sounds as though it's all paying off and you'll be sort of doing your course. September, is it you start?
Yep.
So and then home. Do you get half terms?
I'm not sure. They've not actually sent out the timetable yet, but I think you finish quite early. I think they finish in May, which is quite early. They've got the showcases and things in May. But I'm not actually sure what breaks I get off. But Georgia can help me get, Georgia gets cheap. She was used to the student train things of getting like really cheap rates back home. So hopefully I'll be coming home as much as I can, because I'm definitely not just going to be able to forget about my family and go to London and be like, that's it, see ya. I'll miss them very much. So I'll definitely have to keep coming back whenever I have the time and whenever I can.
Added to which, from my experience, you've got a child in London, it's like you have a base in London, so it might be, Freya, that you may get the odd visitor too.
My mum is obsessed. She keeps coming up with new plans, saying my accommodation is like basically attached to Westfield Shopping Centre. So it's quite a horrible thing as a student walking past all these shops every day knowing that I can't afford anything in them. But my mum's already made plans to come down and take me shopping and visit the restaurants and go into the centre of London and watch shows. So is my dad, and obviously if my sister wants to move somewhere down there, so she'll be close by. It is an exciting thing. I've had friends saying, oh, you know, can I come up and visit you? And I'm like, of course. It feels quite exciting to be the place where other people want to be, and it's mad to think I'll actually be in London. But hopefully I'll get lots of visitors.
I think that's a given, Freya. I think that's a given. Don't fret about that. So okay, we've done this. The podcast is looking forward. sort of had the situation that we had in 2017. Just if I could just drill down, you're a Snapchat generation, that's right, isn't it? What they call you, is it Gen Zers, is it?
Yeah, it's
Gen Zers.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So you've been mightily affected by the pandemic, just as a generation as a whole. So we've talked about if people want to go into acting, but if I could just sort of take a little step back and just say, because you've been so badly affected, Gen Zers, from the experience that you've had and the one that you're going to have, the fabulous experience that's just waiting for you, would there be a piece of advice that you would give to people of 18, 17, 18, 19 that are in that? Because it's quite a pivot time, isn't it? You know, so what would you say to them?
I think in terms of friendships, I've learned so much over the years, and I think pandemics and not seeing people really shows you who you'll miss and who are your real friends and things. And I really struggled with friendships throughout high school. It was a really hard thing for me, and after the 22nd of May I realized that, you know, friends were a very important thing. And I'm glad that it's taken me quite a while now, but I now know that I've got like three really amazing close friends, and that's all I need, all I will ever need. And I think I would definitely tell like my year seven self that that's all I need. It doesn't matter about popularity and how many friends you can have, because all you need is, if you just have one close friend, that's it, and you'll be set for life. And it's really not as important as I think I thought it was. So yeah, definitely I would tell my younger self that. And to just, I think, like, just have fun, I think, whilst you can. I think if I could go back and do year seven to year nine again, I would, because you didn't have any real worries there. There was no pressure. You could just do whatever you want. I think I used to do like 8 clubs a week. I was that little nerd at like year seven trying to figure out what I loved most. And, you know, drama club and music was what I started gravitating towards. And it made me realize my love for that. It's I think our generation is such a hard one. Like you say, I think I just missed out on, I think I got Snapchat and like Instagram when I went into high school, so when I was like 12. But obviously people in primary school and stuff now have like Instagram and social media, which is such a terrifying thought, because the effect that social media has, and I, you know, I'm on it for hours a day, and it is addictive, and it affects your mental health and comparing yourself to others and body image and everything like that. I was affected by that from like 14 onwards. The thought that people now, and potentially my own kids, could be looking at pictures on social media and comparing themselves to other people at an even younger age is honestly such a terrifying thought. I think maybe I would, if I could go back again, I would just take myself even later. I would have only gone on social media if I could change it now, when I was like my age now, because there was no need when I was younger to be affecting my mental health like I did and comparing myself constantly. It's so much pressure. I think, like, sometimes I do think I just wish I'd grown up in like the 90s or 80s when it wasn't a thing, and, you know, you could only like call your friends. You didn't have to look on social media at other people constantly, because it really does affect you. And I think over lockdown, that was a time when we were all glued to like TikTok and everything. I mean, I'm still, it spurred on my obsession and my sister's as well. I mean, I still do look at my phone 24 hours a day. I don't put it down, but I'm hoping that will change as I get older. But yeah, I just wish, it just terrifies me, the thought of younger people on it at such a young age now. Definitely social media is the biggest cause of half of our problems as teenagers.
Yeah, very profound, Freya. And I think you're absolutely right. It's to be hoped, though, that, I mean, I know the authorities are forcing the social media platforms to take more responsibility, you know, for sort of some of the problems that they're causing. And it's to be hoped as time goes on, as we get out of the pandemic and we can raise our heads and look at other social problems, that, yeah, the government, I mean, the UK government, we can't do too much about Facebook, I wouldn't have thought, but it's to be hoped that maybe the world leaders, sorry, this is me being very profound, I do apologise, but, you know, sort of that there is some form of global organisation that holds these platforms to account, because at the end of the day, I don't think these platforms were set up. This phenomenon wasn't part of the deal, was it? They just set them up as a mode of communication. But unfortunately, as you rightly say, that's one of the downsides of it. So, yeah, anyway, this was meant to be a positive podcast. So let's just put it out there and leave it to the powers that be. But it's been absolutely fabulous having you as a guest, Freya. Thank you so much. Thank you for being open. Thank you for your words of wisdom and your insights. And I would hope that whoever's listening to this, whether it be parents who've got children who want to go down the same route as you, giving them a bit of hope and inspiration, and, you know, can sort of just see that the passion will take them through. And as well, if you're I mean, well below the age of the podcast it's aimed at, but if you are in that situation and you know, sort of, you can hear from Freya just how passionate and absorbed she is in it and how it will carry you through and to do it, you know, just to get on with it. But from me, just a sincere thank you, and it's been an absolute pleasure. And I wish you so well with your career. I'll certainly be sat on the sidelines watching you. And who knows, it might be that the most two residents of Holmes Chapel, Mr. Stiles and Miss Lewis, actually one day get to share a stage. So there you are, Harry, if you're listening. There you go. Once Freya's graduated, and if your acting career takes off, there you go. But lovely, Freya, thank you so much. And I wish you really well with everything. Take care.
So there you go, Freya in her own words, speaking about her journey back to full health and also on being a Harry Styles super fan. My thanks go to Freya for agreeing to speak to me during something of a stressful time for her. She was awaiting her A-level results and preparing to take up her much desired acting degree at LMA. I hope the episode brought you something positive to take away, or made a slight difference, however small. And my thanks go to you, the listener, for staying the course and for continuing to come back to each new episode. This episode marks the end of the first series. Over the series, I've covered a whole range of topics which I hope are pertinent to women age 45 and over, and you can find the full list on both the podcast notes and my website. If you've got a pen handy, the website address is www.unicotral.com. I'll be back with the new series in January 2022 with some exciting new episodes and more awesome guests. That's one of the absolute privileges of producing the podcast, talking to the most amazing people. So, until we speak again in 2022, stay safe and well. Whatever worries the forthcoming winter may bring, and just keep being awesome, awesome midlife women. So until next year, take care.